Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career, so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, folks. I am John Najarian from Market Rebellion, and this is Compound Interests. Compound Interests is where I get to sit one-on-one with business leaders, and we talk about interesting topics. A lot of it is finance, but some of it isn't. Today's topic with Bill Capuzzi, who is the CEO of Apex Clearing, is really an interesting listen. I think you'll really find the insights about stock loan, about what Robinhood and SoFi and a lot of these big online brokers with a lot of apps and so forth for your phone. And that's how a lot of millennials and Gen Z folks are trading, is through that app, not on a big platform, but just on their handheld devices. I think you're going to find that Apex, as a clearing firm that clears over 10 million of these kind of individual investors all the way up to institutional investors, it's a really interesting discussion because these folks trade very actively. You've heard about the Robin Hooders or Hoodsters. You've heard about Davy Day Trader Global and things like that. These are a lot of the people who have joined into the market because of COVID, because of the shutdown, and they found more time on their hands. They're pretty good at the apps on their iPhone and so forth. And a lot of them miss gambling on sports. So instead, they've gravitated over to where I think the odds are a lot better, and that is trading stocks. And so I think the discussion with Bill today is going to be one that you'll really find eye-opening as far as how many of these millennials there are that are trading here. He has a survey of what they call the Millennial 100. You'll love hearing about that. And if you like Compound Interests, please give us a 5-star review. We are on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. So we'd appreciate if you'd give us a 5-star review and tell your friends about it. Thank you. Now we're going to tee it up with CEO Bill Capuzzi of Apex Clearing.
Well, thanks for having me, John. Good to see you. I hope you're well and healthy.
I am lucky to be that, and I hope you are. You look it. It looks like you've been getting some sun here and there. Either that or you've got better lighting than me, one or the other. And maybe
one or the other. I call it minimum security prison. I feel like I'm in. Could be a lot worse, could be a lot better, but I'm lucky. I think the one thing to mention for the viewers is, let's just start with what does Apex do? Where do we kind of fit into the ecosystem? And I think the simplest way to describe it is we're a custodian, right? So our job is to first and foremost protect and hold and service the assets of customers, whether it be institutional customers, whether it be high net worth retail customers, but our sort of sweet spot in terms of what we do as a custodian is we service largely the millennial community, right? Sort of the fintech community. And so what sits on top of us, we have a series of really sophisticated APIs, and folks that sit on top of us, the Robinhoods of the world, SoFi, Stash, M1, Webull, Tastytrade, bunch of folks like that, you know, their job is to try and disrupt the old way things have been done, right? Whether that's on the advisory side or find better, more creative ways to compete against folks like Schwab and E-Trade and TD.
Yeah. And so folks, a clearing firm, and Bill sits on the board or has served as director over at Pershing, which is Bank of New York. And that, when he was there, he was responsible for institutional product suite and global clearing. So I think, Bill, when you talked to the audience as you just did about Tasty Trade and Stash and Robinhood, all of those guys are disruptors, obviously, just like you said, and they need a place because the clearing function, folks, is something that when you trade, you and I don't think about clearing much. We're just thinking about the platform we're trading on. And, you know, the next day we come in, we'd like to see all the trades cleared and the correct money's moved back and forth. And that, by the way, that function is what the clearing firm does. They also are intimately involved in things like stock loan and directing order flow. So when, you know, whether you're at any of those places that Bill named and I spoke of just now, or SoFi, or any of these other folks that clear through Apex, that's what they're relying on Apex for, is to find them, you know, I need a short, I need to borrow. You know, chances are your buddies over at Tasty or over at Robinhood aren't out there looking for the borrow. That's Bill and his staff over at Apex. How many different firms do you guys clear right now, Bill?
Yeah, so there's about 240 different institutions that use Apex. And it's interesting because it really, as a custodian, we're a unique asset, right? We're a unique company in that there's really not that many companies that actually custody the asset. And so roughly 50% of Apex is fintech, like the companies you mentioned. There's roughly 30% that are more traditional advisor firms that still need a custodian, right, but want to do it more through a sort of modern lens. And there's roughly 20%, which is more institutional, right? So hedge funds looking for a prime broker, broker dealers that are trading high volume and need someone to clear those trades. But again, I think the sweet spot and where our technology really plays and differentiates us, as you mentioned, you know, let's just pick Stash. Yeah, we clear the trades, we do the stock loan, we do the trading, but the other parts of it are, okay, when you actually log on, you talked about kind of the, you know, where we've been for the last, whatever it is, 7 months now, people are at home, right? And so having a mobile first solution set, so let's just, you know, I'll pick on Stash. We sit behind their app, somebody's picking up their phone and they're logging in. Our job is to open that account and to fund the account. So let's just start there, because you don't get a second chance at a first impression. And our kind of, you know, we have a maniacal focus, so to speak, on making those things happen similar to if you were going to order something on Amazon, right? So type in John's name, type in your address, type in your social security number, press go, and it fires through our APIs. We do the stuff in the background to open that account, and we measure that response time in 7 seconds or less. So how fast can I open that account? And then the second part is, okay, John's account's now open. It's opened in 7 seconds. Link to your bank account and pull that money across instantaneously, so that you can start investing, whether that's passive with somebody like a Betterment, or actively, like you said, like somebody like SoFi or Robinhood or you know, Tasty Trade, that wants to actually buy and sell stock.
Right. So the checks, as I recall too, Bill, are made out to Apex, are they not?
Yeah.
So for instance, and that's, I'm dating myself, I guess, Bill, nobody sends checks anymore.
No.
But there, as they give them their bank wire information, it doesn't go to any of those firms that Bill spoke of. It goes to Apex because, as he said, they are the custodian. So yeah, whether you're moving stock certificates, you know, electronically, if you're using that to fund your account, if you're using T-bills, or if you're using cash, all of those would go to over to Apex, which then holds them. So I imagine, Bill, that one of the big things for you has to be, you know, the security of,
yeah,
you know, because you must be hacked, not all the way into you, but you must be attacked, and people try to hack Apex all the time.
Yeah, well, It's funny, I'm watching CNBC today about, you know, the Chinese government, well, supposed Chinese government backing the hacking of Moderna, Garmin, which I use, Garmin products, the Garmin company got hacked recently. I started by saying our first job is to protect the assets of our customers, right? So there's roughly 10 million customers on our books, John, across those 240 some odd customers. And yeah, we have to take that pretty seriously, right? People wire money in, you got to make sure it's there tomorrow. And, you know, putting up some serious walls around Apex as a custodian is really important to us. Because look, go back to what happened with Equifax, right? Mm-hmm. Where they got hacked a few years ago, it ruined their business. It's just one simple thing like that can really have a sort of dramatic impact on the sort of future of the company. So yeah, for sure. That is kind of number one on our list in terms of making sure we got our act together.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you see it as well, Bill, when they do an interview, for instance, with JJ Kinahan over at TD, or who's a friend, or Lizanne Saunders over at Schwab, which will soon be the same thing.
Yeah, right.
Also a friend. When they do those interviews, a lot of times they'll ask them, well, you know, you guys have, you know, this many million clients. What are they doing? I mean, you guys have 10 million clients collectively through all of those 240 some odd brokerages that connect to you. You guys must have a pretty interesting insight into what the retail customer is thinking, and institutions, because not all of those are retail traders. Is that what's part of this Millennial 100?
That's right. And it's interesting, you know, we'll talk a little bit about sort of this COVID era, which has been fascinating, but we have, like I said, around 10 million customers, and there's passive investors and active investors. The vast majority of the customers on our books are in that millennial generation, right? Folks that the average size of the account is below $10,000. And to that point, you know, let's talk about what's happened this past year. Apex, on behalf of our customers, has opened more accounts year to date than Schwab, than TD, than obviously Pershing, than E-Trade, than Interactive Brokers. Aside from Schwab, which has opened about half of what we opened, we're more than the rest combined in terms of the accounts that's been open. Roughly 3 million accounts year to date been open at Apex. And what it tells you is, that sort of mobile first, right? There's this kind of race now by the more traditional providers to get after it in terms of getting them modernizing what they do. The folks that have had these, you know, that have built their businesses around this, right? We talked about Stash and SoFi and people like that, Ally Bank, that are mobile first. They're giant recipients of what's happened over the course of the last 7 months.
Well, the information that you published, and I imagine that it's fine for us to share, not just here, but perhaps even some of these graphics that you guys gave us. It's pretty interesting, folks, because whether it's Gen Z, for the folks that are born after 1996, or the millennial crowd, which is 81 through 96, or Generation X, which I wish I was part of, or Baby Boomer, which I am part of. Baby Boomers, by the way, are 46 through 64. The number one stock for all of them, and this is not a big surprise, is Apple. And it's pretty much 13% to the low end, I guess, with millennials, it's 10%. But it's as high as 18% the older, towards the boomer end of this. But it's all of the stocks, Bill, that we talk about every day, which is, of course, why we talk about those stocks every day. I could talk about Kodak all day, too. But until 2 days ago, nobody wanted to talk about Kodak because they would have thought it was a a printer or a camera play or film. And yeah. That's not what they're talking about over at Kodak now. But this is all, it's Apple, Amazon, Tesla, Microsoft, Disney, Netflix, Facebook. You know, that's pretty much top of all of these, with the exception of the boomers, which is, it skews just a little bit more. They might have, from Generation X to the boomers, a little more Boeing and maybe yep. some NVIDIA. But it's pretty clear that your Robin Hoodsters are into these top names here, just like the rest of us are, Bill.
Yeah, look, you know, I think the other part, John, is if you look at the returns, so you take those top four names, right, Apple, Amazon, Tesla, Microsoft, and you look at, okay, in the second quarter, how did they perform versus the S&P? They well outperformed, right? They were up roughly 55% versus 20% on the S&P. So not only are they, those household names, as you mentioned, but they're actually picking good stocks, quality stocks, right? People think about this millennials and Gen Zs as just kind of gunslingers that are, you know, buying the Kodaks on momentum. And the reality is, on, you know, when we look across, and it's a huge sample set. We're not talking about 10,000 people. I mean, we're talking millions of people in terms of the Apex sample set, right? They're buying quality stocks. Now, they're also buying, go back to the Peter Lynch, you know, the infamous phrase, buy what you know, buy what you believe in. And I think what's consistent here is they're actually, you know, they're buying stocks that they use, right? That they interact with on a day-to-day basis in terms of millennials. I was frankly surprised, you know, this quarter we extended it and looked at the other generations. I expected the baby boomers, and by the way, you're like 1 year off. You've got to be close there in terms of Gen X.
Yeah, well, you're a nice guy, but thanks.
But I expected, you know, especially the baby boomers, for that list to look more distinct from the millennials. And you know, the reality is they weren't, which I think was somewhat surprising. Now, as you get past that top 10, I think, John, that's where things start to diverge. I think that's where you start to see some interesting trends from quarter to quarter in terms of names that are coming on and going off. And especially with all the volatility this quarter, it's been fascinating to look at.
Well, and I think one of the things that also stands out here, Bill, because, and I mean no disrespect to retail investors, but for the most part, what I'm following as a trader is what I'd like to define more as institutional. I'm following, you know, the big money trades.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that I have, like I say, disrespect for a whole bunch of millennials that might be just like, has been alleged by Cramer and others that, you know, they're all pounding into Tesla or, like you said, Kodak or whatever it might be. I think in some cases they do. In a lot of cases, they're flipping, you know, in and out, just like AV Day Trader Global, you know, the Dave Portnoy phenomenon.
Crazy, right?
God bless him. He brings a lot of people in. He's a Pied Piper. And is he brash and rough? Yeah, of course he is, which is why they bring him on occasionally on television, but he's mainly broadcasting on Barstool Sports.
Right.
But Davey does a great job making it, he puts it out there, I guess, Bill, that I'm as smart as any of these guys that are doing these trades. He said, am I intending to hold this thing for 6 years or six, you know, months? Probably not. You know, maybe 6 minutes, depends. And I think that a lot of what you described about, you know, so you have your iPhone and, you know, these guys are all, guys and gals are sitting there with their fingers clicking through there. The app is what a lot of people really are trading on. I mean, I'm sure a significant portion of the trades that come in through and to Apex are coming in via that mobile app, rather than the platform of a big screen that, you know, you and I are used to. Traders that are trading much more frequently are probably coming in through a platform.
Yep. Yeah, look, I think you're absolutely right. Most of, you know, we obviously know the volume by clients, and most of those clients where that volume's coming in is, you know, they are mobile first. Now they have desktop versions of their platform, and I can't discern whether it's coming in off an app or off a desktop. But I can tell you that most of them drive from a mobile first perspective. And, you know, I think this, you know, this, like I said, right place, right time. You know, I think we hit this COVID thing, all kinds of volatility, no sports betting, like you said, which I definitely think is a contributor here. People sitting at home with more time on their hands. It's sort of this perfect storm of, you know, opportunities, stocks whipping around, really low barriers to entry. It's just easier to get access to the markets today than it's ever been. It's cheaper. I mean, we're now at zero commission pretty much across the board. And then the last part, which I think is really interesting, is, you know, half of the stocks that we traded this past quarter were fractional shares. So follow that, John, right? So now throw in the fact that, you know, Apex built a fractional share engine now almost 2 years ago. It got some interest, some play last year. It's now a massive, it's 50% of the business that we do. And the whole premise is, you know, think about something like Amazon, right? Where's Amazon's trading at like $2,600 a share. You know, that's more than a lot of the millennials that are on our books have in total in their accounts. And so this concept of being able to buy $500, $200, $50 of Amazon has created opportunity for people to invest in stocks that, you know, again, a year ago, 2 years ago, they couldn't, because this concept of fractional shares wasn't available. That's one. And then two, which I think is a little dangerous for both, you know, at least former traders. I'm a former trader, you're a trader. I think the amount of activity in the options space from John Q. Public is something to keep an eye on. That's where people can really get themselves into a lot of trouble. There's a ton of volume that's coming from the retail side as these platforms roll out options solutions. And the markets have somewhat behaved. You know, Kodak, I think, is a great example of where it hasn't. And the amount of shorts that were on, the amount of, you know, folks that lost a tremendous amount of money, not really understanding what they were doing, I think, you know, is concerning. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out over the course of the next, you know, quarter, 2 quarters. My bet, and I'm curious your take on this, is, you know, we'll start to see things die down. I had expected June to be quiet, and it was on fire, rocking and rolling. You know, July is quieted down. I expect August to settle down, people take vacation finally. And then with the election, things to pick back up in, you know, late September. But who the heck knows? I mean, I was wrong. I was wrong in June.
Well, I think a lot of the addictive part of trading is, you know, it triggers that dopamine in our heads, Bill. And when you're right, it just feels like you're on top of the world. For the people that just got stung in some trades, you named, for instance, Kodak, as I did. And there's certainly some folks who probably overstayed their welcome, if you will. Maybe bought it on that run up as it, because for those of you folks who aren't familiar, KODK, Kodak, traded from $2.62 just a couple days ago to $7.94. I happen to have these pretty much right here, I think, Bill. And then exploded to $60 the very next day. And the volume of trade, folks, was enormous. I mean, when it went from $2.64 or whatever up to almost $8, it did that on, I think, 280 million shares. Normal for that stock was like 60,000. I mean, think of that, folks. Not 10x, you know, but just boom, it just blew up. All these people who are on the other side of that trade, people like Citadel, DRW, Jump Trading, you know, Virtu, you know, all of these folks that are on the other sides of those trades were just, I'm sure, overwhelmed.
John, I don't know if you watched it, but, you know, go back and take a look. I mean, it ripped in seconds. I mean, this thing moved so quickly, people didn't have time to react, right? There were obviously algorithms out there that were waiting for this to happen, but the sort of velocity, the speed of how this thing moved was pretty, even for old timers like you and me, it was pretty impressive to see how that thing moved and how quickly it moved.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to see a stock go, folks, you know, like I said, closed at $8, it hit 60 in a hot second and came back down into the 30s almost as fast. I mean, when you look at it on the chart, which I would encourage those of you who do look at charts and things like that, you won't believe your eyes. I guarantee it. But I think it points out a couple things. Obviously, you know, as Bill said, the risks that some people assume in trading. Also, the thing that I want to hit on, Bill, that you spoke of, the fractional trading. And you said, you know, Amazon at 3,500 or whatever, or any of these huge stocks, Google or Alphabet, if you will, you know, at 1,500 or whatever. These are big numbers. And normally, folks, when you're talking about trading with guys like Bill and John, you're talking about a round lot is 100 shares. That's the smallest increment that any trader really trades, is 100 shares. So when I'm trading, if I'm trading options or stock, I'm usually in the 10,000 share range. So I'm going to trade 10,000 shares of stock. If I'm not doing that, I'm trading 100 options. Since every option's for 100 shares of stock, that would mean that that's representing a 10,000 share position. Just throw two zeros on the end of 100 and so forth. But that's not because I'm smart or because I'm rich, but I do have a bigger account than, like Bill said, the average account size that has been residing over at Apex. But that means a lot of people had no access to the market, because a round lot, 100 share trade in even Apple, when Apple's $380, is a ton of money, $38,000. Again, a lot of those accounts couldn't even touch it, which is why so many people trade options, quite frankly, because you could buy a 50 cent option on that $380 stock, or a $2 option, whatever it might be. $2 would be $200. Again, every option is for 100 shares of stock. So a $2 option, $200, yeah, that feels a little more comfortable for somebody coming in from Robinhood or from SoFi or whatever it might be. And as Bill said, though, when they started offering fractional shares of stock, that gave people that want to just trade stock that don't really understand time decay, which is really important in options, or volatility, which is also very important in options. If they don't want to worry about that, they just want to be right, you know, on a binary up or down basis, then you're just trading stock because it, for the most part, doesn't expire. Now that you have fractional shares, somebody could come in there and trade Amazon or Alphabet or Apple or, you know, pick it, Netflix, whatever it might be. These are hundreds, in some cases, thousands of dollars for a single share. So again, somebody at one of those places that has $2,500 in their account, they really think this is manna from heaven for them, because now they can get involved, whereas they couldn't before, Bill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then throw on top, which again, I think is a little bit of gasoline on the fire, given, you know, the circumstances, you know, Schwab sort of pulled the pin last year about going to zero commission, right? You know, Robin was the first years ago. That's how they launched their business. Schwab, I think, was the first big one to say, hey, we're going to zero. TD, E-Trade followed. Actually, Interactive Brokers was before Schwab. But you know, now the actual, you know, the at least the explicit cost to the consumer is zero, right? That commission, which used to be, I mean, back in the day, it was, you know, $20 a trade, then it's, you know, $5.95, and then it's $4.95 and $3.95, you know, whatever it is. It's, you know, it's consistently come down over the last 20 years. It's now zero. And in the minds, maybe you talked about sort of the dopamine around, hey, a great trade. That's the same sort of mindset around, hey, this is free, right? So it's now fractional shares. I can get access really simply, and it's free. You know, that sets up for what's happened over the course of the last, you know, whatever it is, you know, 5 months, which has been, you know, obviously a lot of institutional flow, but unprecedented numbers of retail consumers that have come into the markets. And like I said, a little bit of a perfect storm, right? Because you had no other outlet, right? There's no DraftKings. I mean, what are you betting on? There's nothing. And at the same time, you're sitting at home and not doing your commute. You're not doing, getting on planes. You know, people had more time. You know, I was telling somebody a story. I was at a social distance party with fewer than whatever, 20 people. So let's start there. But it was a bunch of, it was for my son's wrestling banquet this summer. Too much detail. But nonetheless, I'm standing in this group of dads and we're talking. None of the dads know that what I do for a living. And what was striking to me, and I'll make the analogy back to 1999, you know, people are talking, John Q. Public are talking about stocks, right? Hey, you know, did you see Tesla? Did you, you know, Moderna? We should be buying Peloton. The last time I saw that and heard that was, you know, as a younger guy in 99 when, you know, dot-com bubble. You know, those conversations are being had all over the U.S. today. Again, because some good and some not so good, access to the markets is a lot simpler than it's ever been. You know, the spreads are incredibly tight. And, you know, the cost, the explicit costs, at least to accessing the markets are, you know, virtually zero at this point.
Yeah. And I'm sure you'd agree, Bill, that even though there are some similarities to 99, there are also really significant differences. You know, there are some stocks that will, like Zoom, for instance. Zoom does a great job. Microsoft has Teams. Google has Meet. There are a host of other competitors in the space that come at them. But once you get used to something, a lot of people do stay with it. Has Zoom justified this run, this Zoom, from $60 into the 260s? Not in terms of revenue yet, but there are a lot of stocks that I want to trade, that your customers want to trade, Bill, that are justifying it. I mean, you know, it used to be that we'd look at Boeing and say, we have a $12 billion backlog. You know, this is how many jets have been ordered, and some of them have down payments and some of them just have a great history like Southwest or whatever, where they probably don't have to put up as much money because they've just bought for years from Boeing. But then you've got something like Peloton, which I joked about it, Bill, on TV the other day, but you know, they said when they came out, that they're a clothing company and then they're a tech company. And then, by the way, we manufacture and produce this bicycle, this stationary bike. And then we have internet connectivity. So we're a tech company. You know, they have all these different things. And so that's why I told Scott Wapner on our show, I said, Scott, you know, the reason that they get the valuation they get is if you add up all these PEs, that's why they're trading for $60 a share.
Yeah.
But the truth is, of course, that they are actually making a very nice profit on the stuff that they can deliver. And they have an app that is now on Roku, for instance, so that people that don't even have a Peloton bike but want to join those classes and things like that, you know, they have found another way to get a revenue stream in and so forth. But it's not quite the same as theglobe.com in 99, Bill.
Yeah, you're right.
Sky Mall, you know, what is Sky Mall? Well, it's this catalog that you get, and, you know, it's got all this cool stuff in it. Yeah. You remember those things that are in the back seat of the airplane? Yeah, that's what Sky Mall is. It's got a $1 billion valuation.
And then people are
like, But now, to your point, though, Bill, I think there is a lot more conversation about stocks, Tesla, Uber, Carnival Cruise Lines. Most people, most adults wouldn't have been able to give us the symbols for any of those stocks in 99. I know they didn't exist. You know, Carnival did, but the other two didn't, Tesla or Uber. But I think it's not just one-way trade. I think a lot of the folks are not just in and out, you know, long and then short, but a lot of the folks, when you and I talked about stock borrow, there's a fair amount of folks out there that are smart enough to say when they see something blowing up, whether it's Moderna, you know, on a very positive thing that we're all rooting for, a vaccine, when it shoots up, you know, 20% in the morning, there are a lot of folks probably clearing through Apex that say, sold. You know, and have short positions on. And I think that is probably a much, even though it's still a minority of the market, a much larger percentage than it was in 99. Because in 99, all my friends would just call me and say, well, yeah, I bought more Intel. I bought more Cisco. I bought more whatever it is. But now I think a larger percentage, even though, like I say, it's probably under 5 or 10% certainly of your investors or the investors that I see are actively shorting things. But nonetheless, in 99, there wasn't any of that. They weren't shorting anything. They were just loading up.
You'd mentioned stock loan. You know, the interesting kind of, this is where the two sides kind of is a dance, right? So for every one of those shorts, I'll get too technical, but for every one of those shorts, they got to find a locate. They got to find someone that's going to provide them the ability to the extent that they need to, that those shares are available to cover that short. And a lot of that supply is coming from the retail side of the house, right? So at the same time, folks like TD have lost all that commission, right? They're a public company. You look at their commission line. Look at Interactive Brokers next time you get a chance, John. And net interest income is you know, obviously there's no, you're not making any money on cash. Commissions are at zero, but their stock loan revenue is through the roof. And the reason for it is because, right, they're providing locates, right, where the sort of two sides come together. This is where institutional retail, right, Wall Street, Main Street kind of come together. Hey, to cover those shorts, you got to find a locate. And most of that locates coming out of the, you know, the retail side, right? The end consumer, and in names like Moderna, right? It used to be Beyond Meats. It's amazing, like follows, and you know the markets well. It's supply and demand, right? So, right, lots of shorting going on. They need the locates. And the rates on some of these stock loans, the shorts, through the stock borrows are just incredible because of all the volatility, because people are trying to put on these shorts, and retail has really held up on this side, or at least the recipients, the custodians have made a lot of money this year providing those locates to support the institutional side.
And some of the people listening, Bill, will be hearing this for the first time, what you said, as well as that, for instance, if I'm a retail investor, are you lending my stock out? Are you helping people short this very stock that I'm interested in? The answer is it on margin? Right. Because if I fully pay for the stock, Bill, is Interactive Brokers lending out that security without my permission?
Yeah, well, the answer is no, right? So I'll just take it from Apex's standpoint. The customer has to say yes. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, again, let's go back where I started the conversation. Our first job, protect, right, and hold the assets of our customer. And, you know, that's why there's not many custodians on the planet. I mean, I talked about a bunch of them, right? Because to do this right is hard work, right? just the basics of being a custodian. And, you know, as this is a good example, you have to protect those assets. And unless that client explicitly says yes to providing the ability for you to lend out the stock, you can't do it. And that either comes in the form of, like you said, margin agreement, or if the client explicitly says yes to being able to lend out stock and get something for it, right? So in our case, oftentimes the end customer actually participates in that stock loan revenue, right? So our customer will collect it, will provide it to our customer, right? And they'll in turn provide some of that stock loan to the end customer. So it's like, well, this is great. Stock is just sitting in my account, just doing this thing, and I'm getting an extra check. And to your point, look, there is something about, hey, I'm loaning stock to somebody who's shorting the same stock that I want to go up. While in fact that's true, the reality is people are going to short the stock one way or another, mm-hmm. right? And they're going to find that locate. And so, I guess if all of the stock loan went away, people couldn't short. But the reality is that's not efficient markets, right? You want to do both sides of this. That's the way, right? We've been at it a long time.
There's nothing that lights up a stock like a whole bunch of shorts chasing it that have to cover.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just ask the guys in Kodak.
Exactly. And so there's something healthy around this in terms of the ecosystem that's created in our markets. Now, this is all the plumbing and the behind the scenes stuff, but it's what creates orderly markets for us. And so as a custodian, we take it seriously, but that job of providing loans against stock, it creates sort of the grease on the skids of the, you know, keep moving the trains down the tracks in our industry.
Bill, I just appreciate all of these insights. We're going to have you back on the program for more of those Millennial 100 insights, because like I say, you have a much broader swath of investors, not only larger in numbers, but also more diverse. And I think when we hear from some of the other brokerages where it's an awful lot of pros, which is great, and you have those as well, but you're getting them from, like you say, from the Gen Zs all the way through to me. So Bill Capuzzi of Apex, the CEO over there, thank you very much for your time today.
John, great to see you. Stay healthy, stay safe.
You too, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.